That was Gregory Porter with a song called Running, which was specifically written as a refugee song. Well, it's not your usual travel story, but we were presented an opportunity to look at the journeys that many people have made to Australia over the past years, not by plane or luxury cruise, but through much more rickety means. This week being Refugee Week, Adelaine Ng spoke with Donna Rawlins, author of a new illustrated book on children's migrant stories. It's called Waves, and it's for those who come across the sea.
Donna Rawlins, welcome to Travel Writers Radio.
Thank you very much.
Well, it looks like immigration is a subject obviously dear to your heart. Can you tell us why?
Well, I was fortunate enough to grow up in sunshine in Victoria. And when I grew up there, it was already a very, very rich cultural mix. I was born in the late 50s, went to primary school in the 60s and high school in the 60s. And I was probably at high school one of only maybe four Australian-born Anglo-background English-speaking kids in any one of my classes.
Wow.
And so I was actually in the minority group. It wasn't until I left Sunshine and college days that I discovered that there was actually a really white bread world out there. So my roots are very, very culturally mixed, even though I'm from an Anglo background. That I think, you know, we're all immigrants to this country. The book that I've written, Waves, is about the fact that we are all boat people here. If you're not an Indigenous person, you've come to this country from somewhere else. And even Indigenous people did it originally, but that was an incredibly long time ago. And I think I wanted the kids reading the book to actually think about that.
The stories in this book, you go back as far as 50,000 years ago. I mean, that's way before British settlement. And you tell the story of Anak. I mean, how did you find his story to tell?
Well, I mean, I guess I've just, you know, read a lot, and a lot of these stories just eke from the fact that I'm a big reader, and I've always been interested in other people's stories, and I come from a background as a volunteer in oral history, but I'm fascinated with the first Australians. I've always been curious, as I think a lot of us have, about, you know, how we all came out of Africa, you know, the path that we trod to get here. And I was really interested in this notion that we came gradually, step by step, you know, on little raft trips and then across land bridges. And also I think kids are fascinated by the different formations of the land. So when I was a child, I was fascinated with Gondwana, that our countries weren't all the same shapes and forms that they are now. So, you know, the idea that there was a land bridge across from New Guinea was something that I thought kids might be really interested in, that you could walk from New Guinea to what's now Queensland. But it was a matter of reading and digging and finding out. I cheekily put a dog on the raft. We know that dingoes probably didn't appear on the mainland for, you know, a few thousand years after that, but nobody knows for sure.
So some of the stories are part imagination? I mean, it does take imagination to give life to the stories that are from so long ago.
They all are, and that I would know because Anak's story, because it's prehistory. But there are stories, you know, for example, we know that there were children on the boat, the Dovekan, that actually crashed, which was from the Dutch East India Company in the early 1700s. We know, you know, that there were children on the first fleet. We know that there were children who sailed, or young, we would call them children now, young men who sailed with the Macassans and traded with the people of Nhulunbuy as early as probably the 1500s, but we know for sure that they were in the 1700s. So there's enough historical record to be able to extrapolate stories from.
Because I was wondering how, whether these children were ones where, you know, you found their names in some historical record and you just chose to dig out as much information you could about them and, you know, bring life to their stories, or whether how much of it was just, you know, I don't know how much information there is out there about.
Well, varying degrees. It's, you know, obviously the more recent the immigration, the more information you can find. And in fact, there is one child who is definitely a real child, and his name was so fantastic I couldn't not use it. Now, he has almost certainly passed away. He disappeared off the electoral roll in 1983, and he was living in Newcastle in New South Wales. But he was born on a ship that left England in December in 1912, and 5 days out from departure, a measles outbreak happened on board, and there were 5 children and babies die from that measles outbreak, which in those days was fairly common. One woman gave birth, at least one woman gave birth on this ship, and was so grateful that her baby survived that she named the child after the captain and the ship in honour of this, you know, baby's survival out of gratitude. Now, clearly she wouldn't have named the child completely after the captain of the ship because he would have had his own surname, but they were his middle names. And so she named him Gothic Morehouse. And it was Captain Morehouse, and the name of the ship was Gothic. And I had to include that name in the text because I thought it was such a crazy thing.
It's such a brilliant name.
And my narrator said he doesn't look like a Gothic. He looks more like a Cyril or a Roy. But, you know, there's the occasional little sort of wink and joke there. But mainly, no, the stories are based on real events but fictionalised children.
I like how you've left out information about the country that the child is leaving, although you can, you know, guess with a name like Anak, which is the word for child in Indonesian. But many of the stories are told without a start or end point. It's just the emotions captured during the journey, you know, sort of the self-talk that's happening in the minds of the children.
Yeah, because I didn't want it to be very specific. At the end of the book, there are notes that explain, very brief notes that explain each child's circumstances, where they would have come from and when. But I wanted the child reader to basically, to hear the self-talk, to hear this child speaking to them, you know, first person, as if they were there with them. And it's not so much about where they're leaving and where they're going to as what they're leaving and what they're fearful of going to. Because, of course, immigration is not a child's choice. No child chooses to get on a boat. It's not possible and not allowed. You know, it's always an adult who has perpetrated this circumstance, you know, so that for most children, I imagine, it's a terribly scary or awful thing because they're leaving family, they're leaving maybe their grandparents, they're leaving all their best friends, they're leaving their language, they're leaving their food, everything they know to go where and why. I mean, you know, in some of these cases, the children are just completely baffled as to why their parents have made this choice.
Yeah, it's useful to just stop and just remind ourselves of where many of us have come from, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And just the notions that a child might get in their head about what to expect. And one of the things that I think was a very strong impetus for me was that we have in our family some refugees that we sponsored from Iraq. And when they first came out, the youngest child was 8, and when he was confident enough with English for us to be able to ask the sort of, you know, the mandatory honorary auntie and uncle question of what do you think you might like to be when you grow up, he said he wanted to be a lollipop man. And we were astonished that he had chosen this. And we asked him why, and he could not believe that he had come to a place that was not only so safe to cross the road, but that an adult would walk out into the middle of the road with a sign and stop the traffic and stop other adults from driving so that children could cross the road. So in his mind, he'd come to a place that treated children as royalty, and he was astonished that such a place could exist. Astonished.
That is an amazing story.
Oh, and remarkable. And then there were other stories, like on the Diurna, where my children, who are obviously from, although I mentioned that they speak Yiddish, but that are clearly, you know, part of the Jewish diaspora, and they were based on a group of 64 children who came accompanied by one doctor and his wife. And they basically had to keep quiet for the entire trip because Australia had quotas of how many Jewish people they would allow in after the war. Now, I've subtitled the book For Those Who Come Across the Sea for a very real reason, because every Friday morning at my son's school, we sing the first two verses of the national anthem, and we sing that line, For those who've come across the sea with boundless plains to share. And we take pride in that as Australians, that we're sort of somehow really welcoming, you know, that the doors have always been open and, you know, it's a fair go, mate. But we haven't always been like that, and we're not like that now. I think sometimes we kid ourselves that we're a little bit more charitable than we really are, because we had very clear quotas for how many Jewish people could come in, regardless of the fact that there was an incredible need to allow in anybody who wanted to come.
Interesting. Mm. Donna Rollins, great speaking with you.
Thank you so much. My pleasure.
That was Adeline Ng speaking with Donna Rollins. You're listening to The Travel Writers Show on JAIR 87.8 FM.